Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome. It's Wednesday, April 6, 2011. I'm your host, Chris Martinson, and today we're talking with Simon Black, a real-life international man of mystery. Simon, not his actual name, is the proprietor of the SovereignMan.com blog and has become well known for his sharp commentary on economic affairs, which is rooted in an old-school boots-on-the-ground approach. You know I favor that. Simon travels to dozens of countries each year, meeting with key players in industry, government, and finance to develop an insider's advantage in understanding where world affairs are headed. His blog is dedicated to the principle of helping people find true freedom, which he defines as having sufficient wealth, time, and personal liberty, all three. To that end, he produces a daily stream of both free and premium notes from the field for his readers. Today, I'll ask Simon about the more notable trends he's observed in his recent travels, and we'll get his views on what big developments are going to shape the rest of 2011. Which are the ones least known or appreciated right now? What steps should those seeking true freedom be taking today? Welcome, Simon. Hey, thanks a lot for taking the time to join us today.
I really appreciate the invitation. It's great to talk to you, and that's a really kind introduction you gave me. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're more than welcome. So, Simon, let's start with a little background on you for our listeners here. You have a military background, a love of travel, a mind for business. Describe how all these interests led you to become the Sovereign Man.
Well, I started off, I was in my early 20s. I came out of the military academy out of West Point in the United States, and I spent most of my tour, my assignment overseas, and I managed to build up a fairly successful business while I was in. And when I left the military, which I could probably talk to you a whole lot about, but I've managed to block it all out from my memory. Not something I really like to revisit too often. But I'll tell you, since most of my time was overseas, it almost felt kind of weird to be back in the U.S. And so first place I started traveling to when I got out was Panama. And at the time, because I had some success with these businesses that I had built up, I had a pretty reasonable amount of cash, particularly for a guy my age at that time in my life. And I started investing and traveling extensively. And I first went to Panama and ended up further down in South America, and took me to Asia. And, over the course of time, I really started to kind of wake up to what was going on in the world, in sort of the Western world, the old Western hierarchy. And I started seeing how, the real truth of things actually on the ground around the world. And I realized that, the world was actually a pretty big place, and there was a tremendous amount of opportunity, and the more interesting opportunities are really overseas. And, combining that discovery along with other discoveries about Austrian economics and the nature of free markets and true personal liberty sort of led me to the lifestyle that I have now, which is, one where I don't really have a permanent home. I don't have any fixed base anywhere. I spend my entire life traveling. Like you said, every year I'll visit, anywhere between probably 30 and 50 countries. And, each place I go, I'm constantly on the lookout for interesting opportunities, whether they're business opportunities, investment opportunities, or even personal opportunities. And I think that, more and more of those are really overseas.
Hmm. So how long have you been doing this traveling now?
It's been several years. It's been several years like this. We've been doing the newsletter probably just about 2 years, but I've been traveling like this for quite some time before that.
Right. And so this has been let's put this kindly, a rather tumultuous couple of years here, at least in the Western world. What have you been seeing in terms of changes, shifts, anything that's been going on? How it's part of the story that I get from reading is that, maybe Brazil and some of the other developing economies are really not as impacted as maybe the Western world is, that they're sort of in a growth phase or in an ascendancy of what's possible, where maybe the opposite is happening in my country, other so-called developed countries.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody kind of knows the BRIC story. Of all of those, I tend to think actually Brazil probably has the brightest future, simply because if you look actually at Brazil right now, the economy is really based on having these tremendous resources, so it's able to it's able to export so much, and it goes way beyond oil and industrial metals and things like that. I mean, Brazil is one of the places in the world where that's actually the most fresh water, which is, I think, is going to be of growing importance in the coming years. There's a lot of arable land in Brazil. Something, you know, and as we enter into potentially an era of peak food, obviously something else that's going to be of tremendous importance. It's a huge country with a enormous population. And there's about 200 million Brazilians, but sort of like North Americans, they have a tremendous propensity to consume. Brazilians are not exactly noted savers. Brazilians love to spend. Mm-hmm. They get money in their hands, and they love to consume. And I think that in the future, Brazil is actually going to be the most important consumer market in the Western Hemisphere. I think all these ships, loaded with useless trinkets that are manufactured in Taiwan and mainland China, are actually more going to be destined for Brazil than they are North America in the future. And it's kind of interesting because even at this point in the United States right now, there's somewhere between, let's say, 20 and 25 square feet of retail space per capita. And in Brazil, it's less than 5. And I think, there's some significant growth there, especially given the, propensity of that, of the Brazilians to consume. But there's a lot of sort of unknown stories. Again, everybody kind of knows the BRIC stories, but there's a lot of unknown stories around the world. And the place where I am right now in Chile has really just got such fantastic potential, in my opinion. It's a much smaller market. There's, just fewer than 20 million people here in Chile. But this is a place that has, the largest copper reserves in the world, the largest lithium reserves in the world. And lithium is something that, as you know, and a lot of your listeners know, obviously, that's something of growing importance. But it's a place that has really sound, solid macroeconomic and fiscal fundamentals. And it's a country that doesn't play games with its monetary supply. And it's a government that really rolls out the red carpet for talented individuals, professionals, foreign investors, investors of all kinds, entrepreneurs. There's a lot of programs right now, for entrepreneurs, particularly, there's kind of an embryonic tech sector that's growing here actually quite rapidly. They want to turn this into, sort of the Silicon Valley of South America, and they're pulling out all the stops to attract not only the financial capital, but also the intellectual capital to this country. And I think that, in the long term, when you look at, a healthy national balance sheet and the resource fundamentals that they have, all the resource wealth and the level of infrastructure in a country that's attracting the intellectual capital, the brilliance that's necessary for future economic growth, I think it really has just phenomenal potential, and I see a lot of opportunities down here.
Fantastic. So as I looked over your website, you mentioned that, you've been in 20 countries in the past 3 months, meeting with diplomats, entrepreneurs, the real people who live there. So explain for our listeners, if you could, what the edge you feel your boots-on-the-ground approach gives you. What kind of insights can you collect that maybe differ from traditional analysts? Or when you get there, what are you looking for? Like what do you do when you get there that tells you what you need to know about a country?
Well, I'll give you kind of an anecdotal example. Colombia is a great example. If you ask the average person about Colombia, and they'll say, oh, Colombia, don't go there. You'll get kidnapped. You'll get killed. You'll get all these kinds of things. Colombia is a place. If I tell everybody about Colombia, is first of all, forget everything you ever heard about Colombia. Just forget it. Forget everything you ever heard about the FARC, about drugs, about all this stuff. Just forget it. Throw it all out the window and pretend it's a place that you don't know anything about, like, Botswana or, Suriname, one of its regional neighbors or something like that. Nobody knows anything about Suriname. So you kind of have to go into it with a completely clean slate. Then you get on the ground and suddenly you find out, again, everything that you've ever heard about this place is completely wrong, and there are some really tremendous opportunities there, a lot of fundamentals that are, always kind of glossed over in the media. I'm fond of saying that Google is really the black hole of accurate information, and a lot of people just, sort of go into their search engine, and they type something up, and some article comes up that, is generally written by a misguided, mainstream media reporter who, maybe has never been to the place or, has an agenda in and writing about that, you know, not all the planes landed that day and so on and so forth. I mean, it's people that aren't necessarily experts in the things that they're writing about, and that's the impression they get, and they move on to something else. And, when you really get there and you talk to people that are doing business there, you talk to the entrepreneurs on the ground and the investors and, the workers and people that are actually in the know on the ground doing stuff, you get a completely different story. And you can see with your own eyes, you know, whether it's a growing country or, it's a dying country. And, mm-hmm. We're kind of of the opinion that things are either growing or they're dying. And a lot of these places in the world, people have the wrong opinions about are actually the places that you want to be. They're growing rapidly.
It's interesting. I one of the views that I hold is that energy is the master resource. There certainly was a first mover advantage for many of the Western countries that got into oil and, burning through the resources, and they went through the whole industrialization process, all of that. Well, it turns out that history is more of a process than an event, and now we're at this particular stage, and when I look across the landscape, I look at countries like Colombia, like Brazil, maybe like Chile, which might have been classified as sort of developing or, behind the curve or something like that. But what they actually were, if you look at it through another lens, they were saving their resources for now. And they're the ones that actually have significant concentrations of resources, significant opportunities that maybe don't exist in other places. The UK, for example, they've burned through their coal and they're way past peak oil at this point in time. And so they're going to struggle against a headwind for a very long time. That's it's not obvious how that's going to resolve itself. But Brazil, completely different situation. Colombia, completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And there's some level of cycle of these things. And the countries, you're right, that have been sort of saving up their resources and working hard and building up their balance sheets for a very long time, this point is their time to shine. And the status quo simply cannot hold forever. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. A lot of people are sort of afraid by, the declines in the Western world, and they want to ignore it. They want to stick their head in the sand and they want to say, no, this is impossible. I mean, I'm constantly seeing this. When I turn on, the financial media, these guys, who anchor, CNBC or Bloomberg, and they just shake their heads and they say, yeah, we're having a tough time, but we're going to come back and all this kind of thing. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. But the fact of the matter is that you can't be afraid of it. You just have to accept that in certain times, the opportunities are going to shift elsewhere. And that's okay. And as smart, sophisticated people, we just have to simply accept that and say, there's opportunities in other places that we really need to consider now, and it's totally fine. It's nothing to be afraid of. It's something to embrace, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I'm in complete agreement with you on that. First of all, it is what it is. It's going to change whether we bury our heads or meet it head on. Either way, it's happening. So I look at this and I see as many opportunities as challenges, and I'd like to talk about those challenges. Here we are. We're 3 months into 2011. And I guess this is proving to be a year of immense challenges for the global community. We've got a very vulnerable recovery right now in the world economy. We've got a restive Middle East, North African region, Japan's triple whammy of a disaster they've got going on. What are these key themes or trends that you see that are going to define the rest of this year? How do you see them playing out?
Well, I do my best to stay out of the prediction business.
Good.
But I'll tell you what, I mean, what I see just as sort of the trends that have been there for a long time, I think politicians and bureaucrats in general do whatever they can do to cling desperately to the status quo. And these guys have a very limited playbook. Mm-hmm. They can tax people, which is basically confiscating others' wealth. Mm-hmm. They can, regulate them. They can increase the amount of regulation, which is just, it's really just adding cost. It's taxation by other means. It makes things more difficult for productive people to do things. They can just continue inflating the currency, and that's, I think, probably the biggest challenge that we're looking at right now everywhere in the world, particularly in the United States, as well as in Europe. When you have, what have they added in the last couple of years to the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve? Something like $1.5 trillion? Mm-hmm. What has that done to the unemployment rate? I mean, it's barely made a dent. I saw the other day that McDonald's has announced, this big victory that McDonald's is going to be hiring 50,000 people. So, I mean... really, like $1.5 trillion later, and what do we have to show for it? Comes with a Big Mac for $6 an hour.
Yeah.
That's what we have to show for $1.5 trillion. I mean, it's amazing just the amount of money that's been lost. And the consistent thing that I see as I go around the world is, one, is how utterly embarrassingly weak the dollar is. I mean, it's really embarrassing to go around the world and just see how little a dollar buys you in places. I mean, and I'm in places, you know, I mean, I'm in Chile right now. I mean, Chile, if you ask somebody, what's the most expensive country out there, people will think, oh, Switzerland, Norway, you know, these types of places. Mm-hmm. They don't think Chile, and Chile's not an expensive place, but a dollar buys nothing down here. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's a joke. And I think that's really one of the biggest, I think it's really the biggest challenge, is because we see more and more people getting away from the dollar as reserve currency. People are starting to allocate, I mean, institutional wealth is allocating away from the dollar. And, you know, it'll be certainly very interesting to see what happens after June 30th when the quantitative easing, the current quantitative easing round is supposed to end. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't know what's going to happen. I couldn't say what's going to happen, you know, this year or anything like that. But what I can say, you know, I have a high degree of confidence in the fact that any bureaucrat and politician is simply invested in one thing, and that's trying to maintain the status quo.
Right.
And with this very limited playbook, I think they're just going to continue, you know, with printing $1.5 trillion and increasing the debt levels to, you know, a record that the world has never even conceived before. If that doesn't work, well, they'll just continue doing the same thing, you know, over and over and over again. I think there's a long way to go before we really hit the bottom. And that there will be a bottom, you know, in the West. There will be a bottom, and then things will start to improve. But I think given the direction things are going, it has to be a much, much longer slide down before things can really improve. And that's, you know, that's why I think that it's really important that people just start looking at opportunities outside of, you know, their home country, particularly if they're living in the Western world, because that's really where the most sound opportunity is, unless you're in the shorts.
Yeah, this process of maintaining the status quo, in my mind, I call it sustaining the unsustainable. Because what was unsustainable is we were living beyond our means, and we were doing it with debt-based financing, and that's fine for a while. But at the end of that, you either have to accept one of two things. You either live below your means for a while, or you risk trashing your currency. Those are your two choices in this output. I think, you know, Ludwig von Mises said it best of all. He said it's either a voluntary abandonment of the credit expansion, or you risk catastrophe of the currency involved. You know, that's where I think we're going. And everything that I see, you know, the trend that's in play right now, it's not really a prediction. You know, prediction is it's going to be 78 degrees next March 12th. A trend is, I notice that every time I let go of a hammer, it goes towards the ground. It doesn't go up into the air. There's a difference between those two things. Right now, the trend is, you know, the gravitational force in this story is we are just dumping more and more and more money in. And so this creates enormous risks. But what I'm hearing you say is that these risks are not going to be evenly distributed. They're actually going to be contained to within the countries which are behaving recklessly, if you will. And that in your estimation, you see that there are countries out there that are either insulated from that process or maybe not being as reckless, potentially countries that have been through inflationary cycles, so they know better. Is that fair?
Let me be more clear about that. I think that, you know, in the event that, I agree with you entirely. I mean, the trend is the trend, and that's, I think, what's going to continue to happen. And as I said, I think we've got a long way to go before the West really hits bottom and starts to improve. And during that process, I don't think that anybody is going to be completely insulated from the effects of it. It's impossible that you could take the largest economies in the world, you know, and the European Union and the United States, and basically, you know, have their economies walk off a cliff, Wile E. Coyote style, mm-hmm. and expect that, you know, that you know, other large economies, large and small economies in the world aren't going to feel it. I think everybody's going to feel it to a degree, but there are a lot of places that are certainly much better protected. You know, we talked about Brazil and places like that. I mean, these are places that have, you know, they have their own resources. They can pretty much do everything they need to themselves. They have large, growing consumer markets and things like that. So they're certainly much, much, much better positioned to deal with these things. And that's why in the early days of the crisis, as it unfolded in 2008, you know, they kind of got the sniffles and got over it quite quickly versus, you know, in the U.S. and Europe, they had these horrible flus and nasty head colds that have carried over for the last several years and don't really show any sign of improving anytime soon. But yeah, I think in the long run, you know, as decades of capital misallocations and inefficiencies in the global economy sort of get shaken out, there's going to be a redistribution of the wealth. And I think the wealth is going to go to where it's treated best and places that have the best fundamentals. And I think, at the end of the day, that's really what I'm looking for, the places that have the most solid fundamentals and the best growth potential. And, these are the places, as we talked about, that have, the right kind of savings and resources and, governments that are favorable to businesses and investors and, staying out of the way and letting the market do its thing.
Right. So at the core of your website, you talk about your vision of true freedom. And I'm going to guess that we've just talked about a couple of those elements. But can you define can you define true freedom for us just a little bit more specifically? And what are you trying to help people achieve?
Well, there's a lot of things. But fundamentally, what I want people to understand is I don't spend a lot of time in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's not because I don't like it. I like it fine. I was just there. I spent a couple of weeks there just recently. I was in New York and Texas, and I went skiing in Colorado for a little bit. It was a nice time. I recognize that, particularly in the United States and in Europe, there's a lot of doom and gloom. There's a lot of constant bad news. People sort of react to it in different ways. Some people just kind of ignore it, and they keep doing what they're doing, which I think is dangerous. Other people refuse to acknowledge it, and they reject it, and they shake their heads, and they say, no, that's never going to happen in this country. We're going to be just fine. And every piece of data that they see, they reinterpret as why that's a sign of recovery. But I know that there's a lot of feelings of despair. There's some elements, and people even feel almost hopeless. And, what I really want to show fundamentally is that there actually are solutions out there. There are places in the world that are sound and full of opportunity, and places where people can actually live the life that they feel like they used to be able to live. That are full of opportunities that they feel used to be in their country. And more and more every day, as people start to fear things like rising taxes and confiscation of their assets and there's a lot of things. I think, this scenario has not played out. You've got a government that's basically flat broke, that's on the brink of, I know they're probably on the House floor right now debating the debt ceiling. You're literally on the brink of insolvency, and, that carries with it a lot of implications. I'm of the opinion that in the United States, they're going to start going after people's retirement accounts, probably nationalize retirement accounts to a degree, and start doing things where they mandate a certain portion of every managed retirement account into the safety and security of United States treasuries, basically loaning the money to the government at 4.5% for 30 years. Those sorts of things, when they really start coming after people's wealth and productivity, a lot of people get really nervous about that. They get afraid. And again, like what we're trying to show in our site is to say that, it's okay to recognize that there are those challenges, but you don't have to feel despair or hopelessness, that there are a lot of solutions out there, and that the world is a big place, and there's a lot of good news stories out there. They really are. And, all these places that I go, I'm constantly seeing, great signs, great opportunities, and, I try and tell those stories every day.
So are these opportunities really mostly available to the wealthy, or do you feel like anybody could sort of pick up and go? Certainly people once upon a time emigrated to the United States with nothing but the shirt on their back.
Absolutely.
So it's, if we follow that model, I guess it's possible for anybody to pick up and go if they wanted to.
Yeah, listen, I think that, when you're talking about internationalizing yourself, internationalizing your horizons, it means a lot of things to a lot of people. For some people, it actually does mean picking up and moving. And that's okay. And for some people, whether they're professionals who've been unemployed for a long time, you're looking for a great paying job somewhere and it just doesn't seem to be, in your home country anymore. Look at a place like Singapore. It's just a really thriving, growing job market. You're looking for, you're retired and your retirement funds just aren't, don't go as far as they used to. And so, there's a lot of places in the world where you can go and, even on a meager Social Security check, you can actually have a really great lifestyle. And for others, it doesn't even mean leaving their own living room. They can stay exactly where they are, but they can You know, if they want to start a new business, they can structure a business in another jurisdiction overseas that might be more beneficial to protecting their assets. Or one of the things that I always recommend is that people do things like moving a portion of their capital overseas, you know, into a foreign bank account. Or if people like to hold and store gold and silver, you can do it in an anonymous overseas, you know, private, secure safety deposit facility. And I mean, there's just, you know, if you're an investor, you don't have to necessarily stay, you know, in one particular market. You can really explore overseas, and you can see that, and there's a lot of markets overseas that really have a lot more potential than they do perhaps in your home market. These are the kinds of things I'm talking about. If you just think about all the ways that you can internationalize yourself, and whether it's, you know, for the benefit of asset protection or increasing the potential, you know, the growth potential of your wealth or diversification or a lot of different reasons, you know, to do this sort of thing. But I think that, you know, in this day and age, it's really dangerous to stay so insular and ignore the fact that there is a huge world out there full of opportunity. Because, I mean, it really is. Everywhere you go, there's a place. I just wrote recently, I had a hedge fund manager that I knew who some time ago actually made a killing in North Korean bonds. You know, I mean, literally every place on the planet has something to offer. And I think this is the time people really should start looking into that.
Oh, that's incredible, that part of the story. So we've been talking about, you know, people might be concerned that they don't want to be completely insular, don't want to be undiversified in their biggest portfolio of all, that's their life. So for those concerned about where the world is headed, I don't know, maybe they're concerned about high taxes or inflation, poor employment markets in their local area where they live, maybe even civil unrest in some areas of the world. Which countries are you recommending that people might consider looking at first, and why?
Well, you know, I think, again, it depends specifically on what people's goals are. I think that you should have a purpose for everything that you do. There shouldn't be anything that's done haphazardly. You know, if it's somebody just looking for a great place to go and you know, live and just kind of ride out any potential social unrest, and I think even right here in Chile, where I am right now, is a great place to do that. And one of the reasons I think so highly of Chile is because this is the place, remember, they had the earthquake last year, I guess it was last February, they had this horribly devastating earthquake. And just like the people of Japan dealt with it, you know, the Chileans dealt with it in an extraordinarily civilized way. You know, they didn't have this widespread looting and pillaging where they were going and, you know, raping and killing and all this sort of thing. They dealt with it in a very orderly, civilized way. And, you know, when you see somebody deal with just a horrible disaster in that way, you think to yourself, these are exactly the kind of people I want to be around in the event of, you know, some horrible disaster. You know, but it's, you know, it's a preeminently civilized place that has all the resources that it needs, you know, all the food and the arable land and the water and those sorts of things. It's a great place to be and spend time and, you know, ride out any potential social unrest. You talk about economic potential, you know, again, for somebody who's, you know, who's skilled and looking for a job, there's a lot of places in the world, you know, whether it's, you know, in Abu Dhabi or Singapore or Hong Kong, you know, these kinds of places that just have a lot of growth, but they're still, you know, in a high growth phase. And they are looking for experienced, professional, talented foreigners to come and fill a lot of gaps they have in their labor market. So, I mean, those are the kinds of places I think people, you know, people really ought to be looking.
So if somebody says, you know, has to first structure their goals, what are they trying to do? So I'm just trying to find some way to diversify my assets out of the country. Here's a set of things we might do. Wait, I'm looking for a place to spend part of the year. Wait, I'm looking for a place that I'm going to stretch my retirement money out and really enjoy a higher quality of life than I could back home for the same funds. They would start somewhere knowing what they want, and then they begin sifting through the countries. I assume that that's what you help people do. Is that true?
That's exactly what we help people do, and we have, you know, you're exactly right. People should really start thinking for themselves, what is it that I'm really looking for? What are the benefits that I hope to derive by internationalizing myself? And, you know, for a lot of people who aren't even necessarily sure, that's kind of what our daily emails are about, is to, you know, give people a lot of ideas and basic information for that. And then we have a premium service that gives a lot more specifics about, you know, you want to know about this particular country, you know, here's what you need to know, who you need to contact, you know, people who are my personal, you know, Rolodex contacts, people that I do business with, or, you know, my own advisors on the ground in these places that can help people get started. You know, the real specifics about things, whether it's, you know, medical care in one country, or starting a business in another country, or structuring a business in another country, or banking in this location, or opening a brokerage at that location, or business entities in another location. So these sorts of things really, you know, try and provide a lot of very tangible, concrete information, you know, for all these different countries, all the places that I go to, all the people that I'm meeting all the time, and put that into this, you know, kind of one letter that we roll out on a monthly basis.
So people can find out about that at sovereignman.com. Is that right? Is that the next best step, to go to your website and find out what you have to offer there?
Sure. You know, I mean, it's Sovereign Man. It's free. People can look at what we have, see if the information is useful to them. I really do think that it's something that, again, you know, everybody should be considering, because, you know, we're in a situation now where you can't really afford to be insular anymore. You have to be looking internationally. The world is a big place, and there's a lot of opportunities out there, and to shut yourself off to those could be, you know, potentially dangerous to your prosperity and future livelihood.
Right. Well, it is a growing concern, particularly as we see, I can only speak for the country I live in, I guess, but I'm watching what I consider to be exactly the wrong approaches being taken to a variety of things. First of all, I think we have to get the right narrative going. And the narrative is, we're not going to recreate what we just had. That's gone. So what's the future going to look like? We have to start opening that conversation up. To me, energy has a huge role in that. You know, there's enormous structural reconfigurations that have to happen in this country. And we're not even having the conversation yet. We are still stuck all the way back in, how is it that we're going to have exactly what we just had, which I don't believe personally. We're in belief opinion territory. That's not coming back. So I look at that and say, there's huge risks in trying to sustain the unsustainable, not the least of which is you find the brick wall at maximum speed, rather than, you know, getting a gentle way through. So I love the advice that's big world. There's a lot of great places out there. There are wonderful people all over the place, and that opportunity is not evenly distributed at any point in history. And this is one of those times we might want to cast our gaze a little bit wider. I think that's just great advice. Well, we could all use a little bit more freedom, I guess. And the story of people seeking out greater freedom by traveling to new spots is certainly a time-honored tradition. So I want to support the spirit of that. And I want to thank you for your time today. I really do hope people check out your website and operation, because I think it's, for some people, it's going to be just the right answer. And it makes a lot of sense for anybody, but particularly for somebody who's got the means and opportunity, maybe the motive. It sounds like a great thing, and it sounds like just a fantastic service you're offering.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the invitation. It was really great talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Simon. The pleasure was really mine.
Okay, Chris.
All right, take care.
This concludes this podcast by Chris Martinson. To gain further insight into where things stand today and what might happen tomorrow, please visit chrismartinson.com. That's chrismartinson.com. Please join Chris Martinson next time to continue your journey toward awareness, understanding, and action.